And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Plus minus.
Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit.
Plus minus.
That is a word right there.
I didn't remember what you said. What'd you
say? Fluffle.
Plus minus.
Yeah, like you, Marcus Thompson.
Marcus always tell the truth. Plus minus.
The only thing that I would say to Ethan Strauss is that he's a pretty damn good reporter. He's well
plus
respected.
Minus. I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Welcome back to Warriors Plus Minus, your favorite podcast about Warriors basketball. This is without question because we have superstars on this podcast. None other than the great Anthony Slater and Ethan Strauss. And Tim Kawakami and I, Marcus Thompson, we're just here to support our superstars. That's what we do.
We're distributing the ball. Distribute the ball. Yeah, we
you know, set great screens. You know, occasionally we hit an open shot, but mostly we're here for the stars, and we have them.
You don't win titles without role players.
Facts. I need an understanding of the kind of clout that Anthony Slater has, because he starts writing about Jordan Poole and how he might be good for the second unit. And now Jordan Poole's here. So it went from, yeah, he's going to play the entire G League season there. They'll just stay there and marinate. Now it's Jordan Poole's here. So Slater, what kind of clout do you have?
I think Brad Wanamaker might have been a bigger reasoning for this decision.
That's crazy, right? Steve was just like, oh, he plays great defense for us. I know you guys focus on scoring, but he played great defense. And it's like, yeah, Jordan, come on, let's go.
Some would say that maybe Anthony is very plugged into the ways of the Warriors and their thinking. And so sometimes there's a dovetail effect between what he's saying and what they're thinking. Some might think that.
Theoretically. And also, by the way, this little deal that Bob Myers and Joe Lacob were in Orlando very recently at the G League bubble watching these games. I'm not saying they were going down there to make sure they could find someone who could replace Brad Wanamaker, but I think Jordan Poole playing very well down there in front of the owner and the general manager and impressing them. Now, by the way, Nico Mannion got called up too. I don't remember Slater calling for that one either. So his power is somewhat limited.
Yeah.
Somewhat limited. Or it just got, Nico Mannion got scooped up in the wake of it, which is pretty powerful. But I think if the two things, they were in Orlando.
Jordan Poole demanded, my friend Nico has to come
Nico,
too.
Come on, Mannion. they were down there. They were watching. I think there is some, you know, they like Jordan Poole. They've said they've liked Jordan Poole for a long time now. He's playing very well there. And Brad Wanamaker cannot make a shot. Steve Kerr can mention all the things he likes for Brad Wanamaker, but even he says he does have to make shots. Like that has to happen, and he cannot make it. He can't make a two-footer. He can't make a three-pointer. That's a problem with that second unit. It's a problem with anybody they're trying to play who can, you know, who's 6'2" and cannot make a shot.
They're not winning the game defensively in the second unit. You know, they're winning with that starting lineup. I understand their identity is as a defensive team and having a backup point guard who, he's a 31-year-old, you know, pretty powerful, low center of gravity dude that can guard up positions and can guard point guards and does have quick hands. Like, yeah, that's helpful. That's helpful to your defensive identity, but they can't score in those pockets of the game, and they've been losing them consistently. And then I think the second most important thing that has happened recently is Wiseman returning has really kind of thrown that second unit into flux, and they're kind of starting to wonder if they need to prioritize Wiseman in that second unit. And if you're prioritizing Wiseman, having him next to Eric Paschal and with a point guard that doesn't play make at all is not a way to optimize him.
Wanamaker makes plays. It's just for the other team. So his clanks.
He's having a rough week. That's a strike.
Kicking him while he's down.
I like Wanamaker, but my God, he cannot make a shot. It's painful to watch him play offense right now.
They don't run pick and roll. Yeah, I mean, he's not a pick and roll.
He can't make a layup. It's Again, he's a solid, solid, thoughtful player, plays defense, all the things that you like in a player if you like two-way basketball, but you cannot play a 6'2" guy who can't make a shot. It just it's impossible to do that and expect much success for a six-minute run.
I mean, you got to throw a context with all these stats, right? I know the moment you start mentioning stats, somebody's going to say, oh, but that stat this and this stat that. So take it for what it's worth. But for 16 games in the month of February, 15 games in the month of February, his offensive rate is 95. That's pretty, I mean, geez, that's like 1987 basketball.
He wasn't like that in the bubble with the Celtics either. But I mean, again, the bubble.
No, this is not who he was. This is not who he was. He hasn't been like this for the Celtics.
This is what matters the most in this whole, the whole scope of this. He's 31. He's not part of their immediate future. Jordan Poole's 21. He's a recent first round pick. He's under contract next season. James Wiseman is obviously part of their future. If you feel like one unit is playing poorly and the other unit you might bring in might play poorly too, which one would you rather have? The one that's young and developing or the one that's led by a 31-year-old who has an offensive rating of 94 in the last month?
I also get the impression they like Poole, the coaches who work with him, and that they're a believer. They've seen something in practice that we have not seen on an NBA court, and maybe now we're seeing on a G League court. So that's a factor as well. I think if Poole was somebody who had alienated the coaching staff, it would be a different story. But instead, he's made a mostly favorable impression.
And Slater pointed this out, I don't know, was last week or the week before, I think is a big thing, is there's chemistry with Poole and Wiseman. And that's a good thing for both of them, that you could kind of be seen as a unit at this point and thinking, you know what, if we can make Wiseman better, if we play Poole, and Poole might be better than Wanamaker anyway. So it's just an easy little click in that, that those are two guys who can play together, who feel comfortable together. They've seen it on the practice court, as Slater says. Then it's an easy little, okay, there's your new second unit kind of hub along with Wiggins and Pascal and whoever else they play. But I've seen it. I think Jordan Poole's a guy that everyone kind of likes. So it just helps the chemistry of, like, let's get him going. Let's get him in onto the big team. Let's get him minutes. Let's see what he does. He's going to have to perform. But I think that it's just all this momentum towards getting Poole on the court and specifically with Wiseman. And that does not hurt Jordan Poole's candidacy to get some more minutes, that he's tied with James Wiseman.
Poole shouts, catch the ball, when he dumps off the pass and Wiseman catches it. It's this genius innovation.
Even if Poole doesn't play well, they need to know that. They need information on Jordan Poole. They needed more information on him before they, you know, exercise his third-year option. But, you know, quicker than we think, they're going to have a decision on his fourth-year option. And even this summer, if they're remaking their roster, just like, you know, remember they exercised Jacob Evans and Omari Spellman's third-year options and then realized, I don't know if they're part of the future, and got them off in a trade. You know, they need to know if they believe in Jordan Poole as an actual helpful creative playmaking rotation piece, basically as a backup guard. Combo guard is kind of the, you know, the noise you hear from the Warriors is, and not pure point guard, but combo guard that has some creativity. They need to know if he's an NBA level version of that or not before they make big roster decisions with the trade deadline coming up. And then obviously, you know, this summer when you remake your roster. So even if he doesn't play well, they need to know that.
In a less, obviously far less urgent way for roster purposes, but you need to see James Wiseman in different mixes of players, because sometimes he looks good with Steph and Draymond, sometimes he looks terrible with Steph and Draymond. You put him on a second unit, maybe he makes a couple baskets, sometimes they can't get him the ball. Like, anything where they feel like they can unlock some of Wiseman, and we can talk about the Laker game where he barely touched the ball. The Lakers were just all over that lob and not letting him anywhere near it. He clearly didn't fight to get to the ball. Anything where, like, okay, I think with this guard might know where he can go to get the angle to the dump in, or however that's going to work. It's like, let's see Wiseman with different pieces of players, different players who do have a future with this team, and Jordan Poole could have that. I think the Wiseman element is not to be underlooked here.
So I have a question then. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but why didn't you put Jordan Poole in this position from the beginning? What was the whole Brad Wanamaker thing about in the first place?
How could they possibly trust Jordan Poole after last season?
I mean, how could you trust him now? Because he balled in the G League?
Well, no, he played better in the off season.
Nah, he played well in the offseason. They raved about him. And also, he was a completely different player with the ball in his hands last season.
But he has played better at the NBA level this season. In the NBA games, he's played better as well. It's not just, I mean, he had an Oubre-esque slump in his first season. And that doesn't mean that you write him off forever, but I understand it. Hey, I would put it this way, Marcus. Nobody was questioning it. Nobody was saying definitively, Brad Wanamaker, no way that guy's as good as Jordan Poole. If that person exists, apart from maybe Marcus, who was that person? It makes sense to me. I get it.
I spent part of the offseason saying they needed to get a veteran point guard because you couldn't go into the season wanting to make the playoffs with Jordan Poole as your only backup point guard. Now they signed Wanamaker.
Wanamaker wasn't bad last season. That's, you know, they were counting on that Wanamaker. It's like they were counting on that Oubre.
I'm not saying that part is wrong. I'm saying what Slater is saying, you got to develop Wiseman. You got these youngsters on the rock. Why are you going to get a dude who is not going to be part of your team in the future? I'm not saying don't get a backup point guard. I'm saying get somebody who's a 3 or 4 year backup point guard.
If he's good, and if he's as good as a lot of people thought he is, maybe he's one of those veterans, those strength in number veterans, those Sean Livingston types, and you have them in an increasingly reduced role, but they needed vets, man. This is a very young team. They needed people, and so it made sense to me. I think it was a smart signing superficially, but man, teams might have to stop dealing with the Celtics. It seems like Brad Stevens is good at putting guys in the exact role that they need. And you hear a lot about guys leaving the Celtics and getting worse, joining the Celtics and getting better.
You know, I talked to people around Boston because it was a surprise to a lot of people there that, you know, they renounced his rights. You know, they stripped away his qualifying offer. And a lot of people there are like, man, that was like a rotation guy on a pretty thin team. And the word, the rumblings I got were the front office didn't want to give Brad Stevens the Wanamaker choice because they felt Brad Stevens would go to that over younger guys, and they wanted to see if some of their younger guys that they drafted, you know, this is very similar to a Jordan Poole situation with Steve Kerr, could flourish without the choice of Wanamaker. Now, you know, there's a downside to that. Boston has a really bad depth right now. It's why they're not having a great season. A lot of their younger players are either injured or not playing well. So it's a give and take, but you're right in a sense. I don't know. Like, he's just not hitting open threes like he hit in open catch and shoot threes like he hit for Boston. And I don't know that that's like a system thing. That's just like the guy's in like a deep slump.
He's shooting 42% from two.
Yeah. I mean, in the 20s from three, it's just. And, it, you know, we talk about the Oubre. Oh, my God, how long can they go with this? And then he snapped out of it. I mean, it was a month or whatever it was, and that balanced. It's Wanamaker, as Kerr does keep referring, does have a less ability to change it. He's got 6 minutes a half to do it. And, you know, that's three shots, and you're 0 for 3, you're out, and you're, that's what you are. So, but that's the life of a backup point guard. That's the life of a guy that's supposed to lead the second unit. If you can't do it in those 6 minutes, you've just failed. I don't know how much longer they can. Maybe they've already decided they can't go with it any longer, or they're going to at least give Poole a look at it. But I think the equation wasn't bad in the offseason. Like, there's nothing that Jordan Poole had done for sure that made them say that he can lead the second unit. Brad Wanamaker had a career record that seemed like he could be pretty decent on a decent second unit. It hasn't panned out that way. You make a flip. That's why you want depth on your roster. I don't think a lot of us, except for Marcus, figured that Jordan Poole was depth on this, was meaningful depth on this roster. But maybe he is. And then, by the way, they got Nico Mannion at some point. You know, not
Nico
this season,
Mannion
but
shouldn't
season,
just
yeah.
be glossed over here. They like what he did down there in Orlando, and he's more of a pure point guard than Poole. Now, I personally think, I think we all agree, they need more playmaking on that second unit, and Poole has a bit more, particularly scoring playmaking. And, you know, he was a first round pick. Nico Mannion's on a two way. So from what I've heard, they're going to be available in Portland. I don't think they're practicing in LA today because I believe they have to pass a couple of days of testing. I'm curious if like Kerr just throws them right out there. I mean, they have obviously are in a basketball rhythm they've been playing lately, but I mean, I'm curious to see what that second unit looks like against Portland and Phoenix.
I think we're just going to be put in the position of Warriors apologists for a while, just because of the mood, at least of the Twitter version or the online version of the fan base. I do think it's a little bit ornery. They're very smart. They remember everything. They remember everything anybody ever said, and they are coming down from this emotional high of the dynasty into what they are now. Because, and am I right? I think it's mostly positive this season. I think they're ahead of expectations, but If I read the online experience of how the team is critiqued, it is a different perspective. It's a lot of anger over how LaMelo is doing, and players coming up short, certain offseason moves. It seems like it's in a very hypercritical place, or am I wrong in reading it that way?
Shouldn't you take your own advice and not take Twitter too serious?
No, I think it's
like there are smart people on Twitter. Don't get me wrong, and it should be informed of like what's the thought of the fan base. But at the same time, like Twitter is just like a fever pin. Like at all, and I'm not talking about
LaMelo is balling though.
Yes, yeah, we could get to that. For sure. But I just mean in general, and I'm not just talking about Warriors. Like Twitter in general is a fever.
And I made sure to say online because it's hard to know how everybody feels, right? But it's just interesting because that's a lot of where the conversation is and what it is. And I don't think that we want to be in the position of being apologists, but I think it's a tough thing to critique because they are middling. They are literally in between, right? So it's very much a glass half full versus half empty analysis. And natural contrarian that we sometimes can be, if everybody is just angry and it's probably in between, it's very easy to go, I don't know if it's so bad. I think you need to take a deep breath and I think you need to have some patience perhaps.
Well, that's the reaction to the reaction there. you know, at some point where I land on this is you do need to have a kind of a through line the way you think about your team if you're running a team. This is what we think about our players. You can adjust it, but you can't just go, these five games sucked, so we got to change. These five games are great. That's how we're always going to do it. You have to believe in what, you know, your evaluation. Their evaluation this season was they're going to be, you know, they're going to try to win as many games as they can, but they're not going to win a championship. So every decision is kind of made. One-year deals for Oubre and Wanamaker. Good thing they didn't sign a three-year deal with Wanamaker. You know, fiddle around, try to get to the sixth, fifth seed, whatever they, you know, the top they could get, but do nothing that jeopardizes their future next season. Now, this is a Curry prime year. We didn't know it would be. So there's heightened, you know, expectation. I understand that. I hear that from fans. I sometimes think that myself. But also, it doesn't mean you push all in to get, what, the four seed? It doesn't mean you burn everything you thought of. And their decision was James Wiseman was the right pick. It might not turn out that way. I agreed with it at the time. I think LaMelo Ball was another guard on a team that has two $40 million guards. I don't know that you get as much out of that as a team like Charlotte could. But it might end up being their totally wrong decision. You can imagine LaMelo leading the second unit on this team, if he would be happy doing that. We'll see. But it would be a totally different feeling. It wouldn't make them a championship team, though. Wiseman may or may not make them a championship team, plus all the other things we're talking about. But I think where I come from is the Twitter thing that I react to, or the, you know, the Andy Lou and all that, that's fine. I understand it. It's passion. I know that's what Ethan's responding to. But it's also
Andy
my
Lou.
Yeah, but my sense is that
he gets pretty regular shout-outs on this podcast.
Yeah, he does. It's Ethan, it's me, it's whatever.
Because he's very entertaining.
But I mean, also the moment. It's the moment, in the moment, in the moment, in the moment, which is fine. That's Twitter. You can't think like about your team that way. It can't be in the moment. Now, the worst teams do think like that. The 49ers thought like that for like 4 years. But this is not what quality teams. You don't build championship teams based on the moment, the impulse. Oh my God, we got to do something. Fire this guy, bring that. It has to be the long view, and that's what I react to. Sometimes the long view is the wrong view, but it's still consistent, and that's how you build something.
Well, Kelly Oubre is a good example. I certainly wanted him out of the starting lineup. It was a historic shooting slump, and I mean, he's just, yes, the shots are going in, but he's also just a completely different player. He almost seems to be getting it and picking things up. And to flip from this guy can't see any minutes, he is completely submarining the team, which he was, to, man, maybe they should just pay a king's ransom to keep him on for subsequent years. It's been quite the reversal. It's incredible.
Another thing that I think matters, and you know, when you're talking about the moment, NBA teams really only, like, there's really two times to remake your roster over a calendar year. I mean, obviously, yes, you could make a trade right now if you wanted to, but really it's trade deadline. That's when monumental decisions need to be made. That's when they finally decided Russell for Wiggins. Let's make that big, you know, seismic move. And then it's just that little chunk of time on the calendar that's draft and free agency when they're right next to each other. Like, that's when you make your remake your roster in the offseason, and the trade deadline is when you do it during the season. So, like, this idea that, like, why haven't they made the move? Why haven't they gone all in? It's like, you know, if they decide that's the right thing, that'll be a trade deadline decision or an offseason decision. That's not just like a, oh, they lost to the Lakers to move to 19 and 16. Got to do it now. And that's, like, what matters here is, like, those are always the two times.
One thing I do want to talk about, and we've haven't talked about Wiseman exactly for a while. He's been out, and he's just got back in last few games. Any reassessment of him? I've said I liked the pick. I liked what he does. He's different. But, man, there are times, I have to say, where he doesn't look so good, and he bobbles three passes a game. And I just had, again, this is a tough way to grade him. But were you watching Zion last night? And, you know, totally different player, but young. You know, didn't have a lot of games in college either. He, like, pulls balls out of, like, some, they're in, and a rebound goes up. He just pulls it out of somebody else's hands, comes down, goes back up. It's two every time. He goes at the rim hard, and you can't get an angle on him. He's not, you know, he's not, hasn't had 3 years in the league. This is his second year in the league. You could just go, okay, Wiseman's not going to be as good as Zion Williamson. That's not a terrible thing to say. Zion Williamson might become the best big man in the league very soon. But you could just see some of the things that Wiseman is missing. Just that kind of, like, stop, you know, at the post, turn, assess, two dribbles in past somebody no matter what. Wiseman maybe does, maybe he's falling out of bounds and the ball's off his leg. Those are things I think can be analyzed and should be analyzed. Even though he's 19, even though he does a lot of good things, there are some things I think that have put a ceiling on him for now. And the hands and the kind of stability on the post, I think, are two big ones.
I think the hands are the easiest one, to be honest. I feel like that could be fixed. The part that's most troubling is this physical contact thing that he just, he doesn't like the contact. But the part that I don't think, even if you're 19, you know, like, you just know how to play and where to be. And he spends a lot of time, like, confused, like, not, I don't, it doesn't matter what level, yeah, doesn't matter what level you are or how old you are. If you're a big man and a guard drives, you swat the ball. Like, that's not, you don't need to be 25 with 5 years in the league to know that. And he is very easily manipulated by what people are doing. Like, if you step left and you want to go right, all you do is, like, if I fake this way, I know he's going to go flying that way. And I'm open up to the right. So that little, I kind of don't know what I'm doing and I'm trying to read everything. And he just looks confused a lot. And that's the part that's probably most unnerving to me. Is like, this is the type of stuff where I don't know how fast you can get a hold of it. You know, just like, it's a lot. He just sometimes out there, he looks like, and then he starts getting on himself. You can see him getting frustrated, you know, going off on Brad for not throwing it up because he didn't catch a pass right in his chest. So it's just like, you can see him getting frustrated, but it's a lot, man. He, like, if you threw him in a pickup game, I wonder if he'd be the same way. Like, you're playing, like, you played against Marc Gasol, and he's just a yo-yo out there. They're making him do whatever they want him to do. They're making him do it because he doesn't have the feel for how to just play basketball, and that part is unnerving.
It's all born of the same thing in a way, where the hands thing, it seems like it's an unwillingness to just enter the fray. And there's that reluctance, there's that tentative aspect where he's processing, he's just not reaching out and just yanking it out of wherever it is. It does feel that way sometimes, where it's tentative. It's just tentative. That's what it seems like.
Some of it reminds me a little bit of a young Serge Ibaka from the, you know, on the Thunder, from the processing, like, station to station, particularly offensively type stuff. But, I mean, Serge was obviously a much more natural shot blocker at that age. But what's weird about Wiseman is, like, you're like, man, no natural feel, no natural feel. And then suddenly he makes a move that looks very polished.
Unbelievable, like, right?
Yeah. Like, spin move, dunk, yes. And you're like, what?
Yes.
Like, what is that?
His per 36 numbers would say this guy's is a future superstar.
Well, that's the crazy part. He does give you some production despite all of it.
Well, Nate Duncan was saying it on Ethan's podcast the other day. If he is just catching the ball, like, his numbers are ridiculous. We watched the Hornets game together, and we counted five bobbles that should have been buckets, particularly because the way the Hornets were defending was terrible in that game. But, and it's like, if he did that, I believe he had 16 points in 16 minutes. He would have had 26 points in 16 minutes if he's just snatching, dunking. We know once he does get the snatch, he's pretty easily dunking the ball. But it's like, so the bobbles matter, and then, yeah, I mean, just the natural feel, and again, it's this is going to be a test on if you have a willing participant and the, you know, athlete that Wiseman is that wants to learn as much as he does. Can you teach feel? We're going to learn that over the next few years.
He is massive. That spin move he had for a dunk a couple games back, where you just don't see players do that, because after the spin, he's rising up from the dunk in an area you usually associate with a layup or a floater, and it's, oh, he's right there. And I don't know how to project all of it. I don't know how to project when the light bulb turns on, if the light bulb turns on, because as Slater is saying, if he can just catch the ball, he's just a remarkable offensive weapon. And then we worry and talk about the defensive aspect as well. So he is an idiosyncratic player, a very hard player to assess and analyze is my take on him.
So, I mean, I know this is crazy to think since he's the number two pick, but should he have gone to the G League bubble? If the stuff we're talking about is just like unlimited opportunity and game reps and play, and, you know, like, I mean, I know they couldn't do it, right? You can't send the number two pick down, but
I think he would have dominated there, and maybe it wouldn't have been as beneficial because it wouldn't have been hard. And some of the things.
But it built his confidence.
Yeah, I guess. Like, so Damian Jones.
At least I know I'm a,
they're too thin at center.
Yeah, and they do need him to play.
They can't do it, yeah.
And they want him to play with Steph and Draymond. They want him to get those reps when he can. But it's not a bad point. I think, theoretically, it would have helped him. Just go run up and down and be your good self and get those college games that you didn't get in a more controlled setting. But they need him. They're going to play him. And listen,
He produces.
He does. And he hasn't been a terrible drag on them.
He's helped them win games. He's helped them win random games this year. He's also
and notice that Kerr went with him and not Looney in a couple rotations when he would bring Looney back.
Looney does it, and he's 6 years into his career. Like, catch the ball, Looney.
He does catch the ball, but he can't finish. Yeah, he can't finish.
Yeah, it's the
either.
Finish. It's the finish, yeah.
Looney's career high is 15 points, by the way. I looked that up the other day.
I do believe, my understanding is that they're intent on playing Wiseman even a little bit more. Like, they're just going to play. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to do it every single time. If he's terrible, maybe not. But I think they're thinking part of the get him in the second unit is make sure he gets 12 minutes. We know there's 12 minutes that he's going to get, and it might be more than that. Their intent is not to go away from Wiseman at all. It's to, in fact, play him more and kind of live through some of this and hope that it's just more natural form. He picks it up as he goes, and sometimes he's going to go for 15 and 10 just because he has that kind of talent. And maybe that just continues to go and go, and he just gets a rhythm in the NBA game, which I think we're all saying he just does not have right now.
They need to get his brain as ready as possible for next season, and to me, that's not in the G League. That's getting Marc Gasol minutes. That's getting Nikola Jokic post.
Getting schooled, right? Getting your hat handed to you. Yep, yep.
Exactly. And Marcus, remember when he got benched and we were all on here like, you know, is that should they have done that? And you were like, look, they need to see him handle this. And I think that's the same. They need to see him go through these struggles. Now, what has definitely materialized, and where I think the LaMelo Ball stuff does matter, is that LaMelo Ball looking like a young superstar in the making heaped a bunch of pressure on James Wiseman. And it's a guy who's clearly already in his head a little bit. I mean, we're talking about the frustrations on the court that he's showing and how quickly he wants it to come and it's not coming. Like, if this top three went as we all presumed it was, which was Edwards kind of struggling like he's struggling. Obviously, he has the highlight moments, but he's overall having a very inefficient year like we all thought. And if LaMelo was who we all
thought
he was.
You don't love basketball by bringing that stuff up. You don't love hoop.
No.
You can't experience joy. You're unable to experience joy.
If LaMelo was having just, you know, the flash moments, the great passes, but in general he was shooting, let's say, 29% on a lower volume of threes. He wasn't really helping Charlotte win, and he just looked like, you know, an intriguing young player, but, you know, still, like, for sure a normal rookie. I don't like this. We wouldn't be so fiercely discussing Wiseman, I don't think. But because LaMelo looks like a potentially a big missed opportunity, suddenly it's like, you know, you better show something quick, James. You better show something quick. And I feel like, you know, I don't know. We're not around nearly, you know, obviously because it's the Zoom world. But it does seem like just the immediate and growing pressure does seem to be getting to him a little bit.
That's interesting.
Let's see. Let's see what the reaction is to him.
Meet the go through the draft process with them guys, right? Like, so he's been linked with those guys for a while. So there's no way he's not watching them, right? There's no way he's not paying attention to how they're doing.
We will be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
What do you think of Draymond the other day tweeting out LaMelo Ball is a problem?
Not helpful. I think maybe he did it without any sort of sense.
Maybe it's part of it. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's tough love.
Yeah, maybe it's a motivational tactic.
This guy's a problem. Maybe you should become a problem, or we have a problem. Maybe that's what that is. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and this is something I would love to ask a guy like, you know, and again, a lot of these guys won't answer, but I would love to ask a guy like Marvin Bagley or, you know, like how much did Doncic's rise matter, you know, early in your career? How much did you think about it? Or, for example, like Trae Young, you know, like that was such a storyline. Storylines follow, you know, high draft picks.
You got Lloyd Pierce fired.
I've got another take too, which is, you know, maybe we should also consider that this is a very strange season to be a rookie and there are no fans. We might not know what these guys are really going to look like when things are actually normal. I think obviously there's a lot of pressure and we're very much in the moment, but we need to step back and just look. This isn't even the real NBA as we know it. This is like big time summer league. So it may be just patience. Patience is good.
Ethan's theory that the bubble play might not translate is looking pretty good right now. I will tell you that. Now, some of it does translate. I mean, Damian Lillard being great in the bubble translates. Devin Booker being great in the bubble probably translates. Jamal Murray probably
Jokic. That bubble thing was still different.
Yeah.
People were going on Luka's, like Luka's a number one player. And it's like, well, he might well get there.
Tyler Hero. It just was different. There wasn't travel. There weren't crowds. You know, it was a theater game. It wasn't
certainly
the
wasn't
NBA,
a normal playoffs.
But, yeah,
certainly
exactly.
The lack of crowds. I do wonder, and we can ask more questions about Wanamaker because it does seem like the shooting is unbelievable in some of these settings with no people watching. And for some reason, Wanamaker and Oubre for a huge segment of the season went the exact opposite direction.
They need a crowd.
Yeah.
But I do think a lot of these guys play better. That's what makes it scary. That's one of the things that makes it scary is when there's 20,000 people watching you. And if you're in a gym that's basically empty, it's a different situation.
What if it's like being at the free throw line on a tech, like by yourself, you know, it's harder.
I don't like that.
For some people to shoot that. Yeah.
Yeah. But can't you imagine Wanamaker now with a full crowd of Warriors fans every time it put up a three? No. It would be tough. It would be tougher for him. But it hasn't been easy for him anyway. So I think, yeah, this is a different kind of basketball, but you have to just judge it in relation to everybody else. You can't just say, you know, some things do matter And the Wiseman thing is going to be fascinating. It's just going to be a fascinating judgment throughout all their careers. Again, I think we all think he's got an enormous potential and he's really interesting. But there are some things. Again, when I saw Zion, I just went, there are things that Zion does that I don't know that Wiseman is ever going to be able to do. Just that decisiveness, just that feel like this angle, I'm going to go left. You know I'm going left, and I'm still going to get left. But he's got a feel for the game, too. And again, you know, sometimes he doesn't look great. But man, he's got a feel for the game, that guy.
Yeah, he passes well too. You know, Wiseman will have again. It's this odd thing where you see it in bursts where Wiseman's had some nice. He had like a transition pass to Wiggins at one point, and he's had a couple nice reads. But in general, if he's touching it, he's shooting it. You see the lack of feel, but then again, it's like this. He's turned then into the Matrix for 8 seconds, right? Yeah. And you're like, whoa, he like understands all of it. What is that?
Can we get some more three-pointers, by the way? Because if he's going to maybe struggle with some of these things, I want to see the thing that he is.
Take that over the 22-footer. Like, at least step all the way back. He needs to get rid of that shot completely. Like, just don't take it. You know, the thing that
The post-ups are super inefficient.
Post-ups are not. But I'm saying, like, if you're guarding him, you can essentially make him do what you want to do. Like like TK is saying, like, when Zion wants to go left, he's going left. When you want Wiseman to go left, you can make him go left, right? You can kind of manipulate him just because he's still learning all that stuff. But the part that, like, the reason I think LaMelo is standing out, because some of the things that people thought he couldn't do, like, he's doing them. That's the concerning part. Like, yeah, the thing we thought Anthony Edwards couldn't do, he can't do it, right? He's inefficient. That's exactly what we thought. He'd be a volume shooter. Even Wiseman, the things that, you know, we thought he couldn't do, like, they're real. Like, he's 19. He's got to learn how to play. But LaMelo was supposed to not be able to shoot, you know, couldn't score.
Is he up to 37% from three, LaMelo is? This is crazy. 80. He's over 80.
80%, yeah. It's just like, okay, if he's figured that out already, like, you presuming everything goes up from this point on for all these guys. But it's like, that's the part where it's like, uh-oh. If he's conquered that already, that's unnerving.
You know, and LaMelo's been great all season, there's no question, but I was really impressed last the game against the Warriors. They're down. They're not going to win that game. I think they got within five or whatever it was, but he was fighting. I mean, that's the stuff I think Draymond really admires. It's like he was like single-handedly fighting the Warriors to try to get back in that game, and he was almost doing it. And, you know, just all over the court, stealing the ball, going, you know, leading the break. That's the stuff that makes you think this guy at 19 years old, at 22, he's going to be something. Like, he might be something next season. He's something right now, but he can really be something. And you don't, again, big men are different. They're not, you know, it's not in their who they are. It's not in their game to just take over like that. But that's the stuff you don't always see from Wiseman and from Edwards. I think you see it just when he's dunking more often than anything. LaMelo just has that, I am going to control this game right now. This is going to be me. And I'm going to fight you tooth and nail. I'm going to try to steal every pass. I'm going to try to knock the ball out of your hands. I'm going to rebound everything. And I'm going to go up court. I'm going to hit a three. Like, those are things that impress other players. I know Draymond loves it about Luka. Like, Luka's going to, I'm going to give me the ball. We're going to win. And man, LaMelo's got that. He's got all of that.
His hands are so fast. Like, his hands and his mind. There was a.
And he's long. He's like, you know, he's fast.
Yeah, he's not little at all. Yeah.
There was a play in the game against the Warriors where the ball was fed back. He passed it in, can't remember to who, a big, like, along the baseline. And then the big passed it back to him, and it almost just got slapped back to the big before you could even think about it. And it worked. And it's just, he just sees the game. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, you guys would agree with what I was saying earlier then, that this changes the conversation for Wiseman. You know what I mean? And fair or unfair, look, if LaMelo Ball is having a disappointing season, again, just the season we probably presumed he would, we're probably not even having this long a discussion about James Wiseman on the podcast. We're probably just saying, you know, hey, you know, all these top three rookies are going through their rookie struggles. But the fact that LaMelo's done this is, it's just ratcheted up the volume on Wiseman at a time where we all know he's not ready for it, but it's just made it so we have to talk about it as much.
And I'm not so critical of it because I obviously didn't see this LaMelo thing coming, that he would be a better NBA player than NBL player, but that's just how it goes. If the guy you didn't pick turns out to be great, then everybody's going to shit on you and mock you. That's how it goes.
I don't know. Johnny Flynn had a fine career, never suffered one moment for that. There was no premonitions there.
Twitter wasn't around then, though.
it was just when it started.
It's a cruel world, and I think some of it is false. I think there's this weird impression that the only reason the Warriors didn't draft LaMelo Ball is because Steve Kerr is ornery or something like that. I don't think that's the case. I think a lot of it is evident, and if you just watched what he was doing in the in Australia and just the inability to do these things that he has the ability to do now. And I think it's a tremendous credit to LaMelo that he's played so well in the NBA. But ultimately, fairness isn't really what this is going to be about. It's just, it is what it is. If he turns out to be a superstar, you're going to be mocked. That's just how it goes.
And it's going to be James Wiseman's development. That's what we've talked about this endlessly from the moment they drafted him. This season, in large part, was going to be about James Wiseman finding himself, moving towards being able to be a solid to good to possibly great NBA center. Wasn't going to happen this season. Now, Steph Curry kind of took this on his own. Like, I didn't realize it was going to be about the Steph Curry renaissance, but that's pretty good for the Warriors when Steph Curry decides, hey, reminder, I'm still one of the three best players in the league. But which has changed the tenor of this a little bit, again, and I get that. James Wiseman, whether or not he can be a star player in this league is what the future of the Warriors is largely about. It's also about the Minnesota pick. It's also about Draymond and Klay, all those other things. But, man, what we're seeing in this season, the significance is James Wiseman, and that's why we're talking about it. And LaMelo Ball adds, you know, underlines it, no question, no question.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
By the way, our Shams Charania just reported that the NBA and NBPA are planning to eliminate the 50-game limit for two-way contracts this season. So Nico Mannion is off the reins.
Well, he was
unlimited.
Already,
oh my God! Dang, we're past that. Oh, okay, no limits. Nico Mannion every game now. But that this definitely affects Juan Toscano-Anderson, right?
I don't think they were too worried about that, but yeah, they don't have to worry about it at all now.
This eases the pressure on them. They can go through the trade deadline, figure out where they want their roster to be, and then if they just decide, look, they want to give Smiley Geechin another summer in their program, then they could just go into the playoffs. And at this point, what Shams is reporting is that they could just play, JTA's on the roster for the rest of the season.
Oh, the two ways are available?
Yeah, that's Shams reporting that the two ways will be eliminated, or the 50-game limit will be eliminated, and that they'll be eligible in the playoffs. So he's essentially is on the roster for the full season. And then, you have his rights on a two-way, and you could talk about putting JTA on the roster this offseason, but it just doesn't force you to cut Smiley Geechin. Now, we could have the argument.
What is that? I didn't see that. Oh, he followed it up. Okay.
He said, and to allow two-way players to be eligible for the playoffs.
Wow. This is the Smiley Geechin rule, basically. This is because everybody knew the big decision was coming up on the Warriors, and we cannot put them through that crucible. The Smiley Geechin must be on the roster no matter what.
Well, this allows them to, if they decide they do want to cut Smiley Geechin, you have another roster spot for a vet. You know what I mean? You don't have to then put JTA into that spot. So it's helpful. It's a helpful ruling.
You think they're going to use a DP, disabled player?
You know, depends on who's available. You know, PJ Tucker's not having a good season in Houston, and he was kind of.
Is anybody in Houston having a good season?
John Wall's having a nice little story there.
The center that Barkley doesn't know his name was
Christian Wood. Yeah, is he but back? Then he like hurt his.
He's a good player though. Yeah, and you know, and what would PJ Tucker really do for? I like him a lot, but you couldn't. It'd only be for the rest of the season. You know, play small ball, be a little more dangerous in the playoffs. You know, possibly not. I get it. I don't know that they would do that. He would be the only thing I could, the only player I think they could possibly consider.
I hadn't
for this.
Checked in on Houston in a while. They're 0 for their last 10. Oh, yikes!
Not good. Not
yeah,
good.
It's been a struggle. It's been
they
a
lost
struggle.
By 49 oh my God, to Steven Memphis Silas. The other day. 49-point loss in Memphis the other day. The Grizzlies bench cumulatively outscored the entire Rockets team.
Yeah, that's a rough one. So what do they need then?
Like who, the Warriors or
yeah. They need playmakers, man.
No, Warriors. Yeah.
They need to figure out what Poole is.
They need G League Jordan Poole to be NBA Jordan Poole. That's what they need.
They need him to burst score off the bench and run some pick and rolls, pick and pops with Wiseman, Pascal even, right? Pascal could do some of that too. But yeah, I mean, in general, what Ethan's saying is right. They don't need him to be high volume nightly score, but they just need more dynamism in that second unit, right? I mean, that second unit is just lacking.
Is there an existential question? Can they ever get that at Andrew Wiggins? Isn't that what he was supposed to do? I mean, I understand. I'm the one who keeps saying never expect things out of Wiggins. Like, it's so much better if you just put him out there and he'd get 16.
You can't, though. Yeah. You can't get $30 million. Dollars yeah, and
I know, exactly.
And
you're putting him on a second unit, and some of this is like, hey, go do something. This is your time to get 6 shots off. But instead, it's Eric Pascal going one-on-one. And I give Pascal credit. He does it. He tries to do something, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. Wiggins just doesn't do it sometimes, like literally nothing. Can you ever get that out of him? Is there a way, is there a combination of things you can do to say, Andrew Wiggins, we really need 6 shots from you in this moment?
He's a third or fourth guy that when the first and second guy leaves, he doesn't go, well, now I'm the first guy. He's like, I just kind of want to be the third guy. That's just him. And he's good. Like, he fits his role with the Draymond Steph units, and he doesn't really fit his what should be an upsized role in the second unit, and that's just him. He's not the leader of an offense. So at this point, I wouldn't rely on him to be. I would look for it. You know, I would try to find something else to run that second unit through.
Yeah, but I'll just say that is, and I agree with you, absolutely, but it is that's a hole in that second unit. When you,
as Marcus said, yeah.
When you got $30 million player, and you are a
number
one overall
pick. Yeah, but we know the context
pick.
Around that.
Yeah,
But now you sound like Minnesota, right? You're the number one overall pick at $30 million.
Question,
that's
no
the
question.
Team that gave him all that.
No, but they were saying deliver our franchise into winning ways, into contention. That's a lot different than, yo, can you go get 10 points with the second unit? Like, at some point, he's got to meet a bar, right? You can't just say, there'll be no bars. There'll be no bars
to meet. His bar was, you know, replace D'Angelo Russell and be a better fit. And he's done that. And bring a first overall pick with you. Hopefully,
but isn't
good.
Part of that the secondary playmaker, secondary scorer? That was part of replacing Russell.
They can't say, hey, can you be Terry Rozier for a little bit? You know, I mean, you could be somebody like that. But no, he can't.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I'm agreeing with Slater here. Yeah, I'm agreeing with Slater. But it is okay for people to say, at some point, he's got the talent to do this. Like, he does have the talent to do this. It's just not in him to tap it more than once a week. You know, it's okay to acknowledge that, but also it would be unfair to continue to expect that out of him and to try to build anything out of it, because this is not going to happen.
He just needs to keep playing defense like he's playing. You know, he's a key perimeter piece of a top five.
He's got to shoot the three a little better than he did recently.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you'd want him to do that, but you know what matters? The Minnesota Timberwolves are 7-28. There is no other Western Conference team. Even the Houston Rockets, who have lost 12 in a row, are 11-22, and they're the next closest. So the Timberwolves they're out in front for worst record in the league right now, and they're running away with it. With a new coach who, you know, with how that situation went down, Russell's
Detroit,
hurt.
Detroit, 9-25, giving them a good run.
There you go. There's the competition there.
Minnesota's second best player this season, Malik Beasley's now suspended for the next 12 games. Yeah, that part of Wiggins came along with that pick, which is what really matters. I think, again, I mean, it's got to be Poole Wiseman in the second year. Pascal, too. Pascal's a better ISO scorer.
And I agree with you. I'm just saying it is something when we're talking about a second unit that has Andrew Wiggins on it, and we're talking about everybody else needing to do more, including Wanamaker, but not Andrew Wiggins. And again, I acknowledge the truth of what you're saying. I acknowledge the reality of his career, but it is something.
I don't think it's acceptable, man. Like, no, bro, you got to go get your – you got to – no, just can't do it.
Part of what we're saying is he's got the talent. I mean, that's what it looks like. I mean, I know Wolves fans
more than Brad Wanamaker does.
Then don't put him in a second unit then. Like, if it's that simple, swap him with Oubre or somebody, but don't put him in a second unit then. Like, then you need to play that whole 12 minutes with Steph and play defense, right?
Well, he's fine in that second unit. He's just not, like, leading it. He's not just put the ball in his hands. The reality is, I think they've tried to do that some. He's not efficient with that.
Oh, we saw some of it. We saw some of it where he tries to take the, you know, one on two fast break, and
he's sloppy with the dribble. He doesn't dribble well in traffic. Now, you know what? Okay, I'll give you guys this. I think they could post him up a bit more, particularly when there's smaller guys on him. He does seem to have that nice, like, you know, one, two dribble back in little like hook shot when he gets close. Sure, do a little bit more of that, but I just wouldn't roll it out there and say, here, put the ball in his hands, like just go for 6 minutes, go off.
I'm mostly looking at it as the Warriors are ahead of expectations defensively. What were they ranked defensively last year?
I mean, can we be honest, though? I mean, they're ahead of expectations defensively, but they're not a top five defense. When they're playing good teams, that defense isn't a top five defense. They're not shutting teams down.
I mean,
down
it's the modern NBA, so yeah, it is a top five defense. The problem
cumulatively, it's a top five defense. It's not like the previous defense that was like ranked 11, but when they needed to be top five, they could be top five.
But they went from tied for 25th to now top five right now. I mean, that's an incredible leap, and I think it sometimes gets taken for granted because we all think about offense, we watch offense, fans enjoy offense. But to make that leap, I mean, just imagine how bad they would be. Just imagine how bad they would be overall if they were still had last year's defense.
They have better defensive players. You know, Oubre is a better defensive player than anything they had last season at the wing. Draymond being, you know, mostly in the lineup, mostly very good, changes it as opposed to last season. Steph's playing good. I mean, like we talk about, I mean, Steph's playing good defense too, like certainly at an elevated level from where he was early in his career. So, yeah, they should be better.
I'm saying that Wiggins is part of that.
And, yeah, no question.
And I think that it's easy to take for granted sometimes. I never thought that he would be a generator of offense. I think he is very much like Harrison Barnes. And that means when Clay comes back, I see him fitting in really well to what they do. Just hit open shots when the ball comes to you. And he won't have as much of a burden. So I like a lot of what I've seen from Wiggins this season, the fact that he can be part of a defense that's performing well. And I think that there's not going to be too much demanded of him theoretically going forward to try to carry an offense because I just don't.
But that's literally what they're doing, though. That's literally what they're doing.
But they didn't know that Klay Thompson.
Came in, Steve has said it. Like, I want him to take over the second unit. We want him to go dominate the second unit. Klay's been out. Klay's been out since June.
But they don't have anybody. They just don't have anybody other than maybe G League Jordan Poole who can do it. They just don't have it. So Wiggins is out there asked to do it because there's no other better option. What is it going to be? Is it going to be Oubre trying to do it? Is it going to be Wanamaker? You know, it's just a job that's fallen in.
When Pascal suddenly had a weird like 8-game stretch where he was just going off on these bigs. So, yeah, I mean, and remember how, when he was doing that, I was like, whoa, this was a hole that they had that he's suddenly filling. And then now that he's struggling, it's just, yeah, it's a hole that Wiggins isn't going to fill. Like, $30 million or not, like, it's just not happening.
Jonathan Kuminga is going to fill it next season, so.
Maybe Suggs drops.
One of those guys. There's going to be one of those guys at five. There's five really good players.
That's some of the pressure on Wiseman over the next few months, right? I mean, like, that could be where he could help if he could, you know, make a little leap, but he's going to have to make the leap before he can help in that category.
Yeah, y'all just giving out passes to people. Scoring 10 points against second units. That ends my podcast.
We're giving G League passes. Look, he's going to be good because he's good in a G League bubble. The G League bubble's everything.
Andrew Wiggins is Andrew Wiggins.
That's not true though.
Like Andrew Wiggins can score.
I think that is very true. I think you can't.
I mean, he is.
That.
No. I'm just saying the Andrew Wiggins, who is Andrew Wiggins, is literally a 20-point scorer per game.
Not because you give him the ball.
But it doesn't matter. Like, we're saying this dude can't score against second units. Is that really the conclusion we're making? That's what we're saying? The dude who averaged 19.5 points for his career on 44% shooting, we're saying...
But not efficiently.
He's not going to be able to... Nobody's asking for efficient. We're just asking for the buckets. Like, you telling me, Andrew, it's an unreasonable thing to ask Andrew Wiggins to go score against backup players. I don't think that's unreasonable. This dude can score. He averaged 23-6, 21-8, 20 points. Like, that's not easy. That's not difficult to do. So I'm saying whether it's they need to switch the lineups, they need to work on a different offense or something, you can't just be like, it's Andrew Wiggins.
If you're asking him to do that, he's just going to leave a lot to be desired. He's going to have little, you know, three-minute clips at times where you're like, that's the Wiggins I want. Look, he just scored 6 points in 3 minutes.
That's a very Minnesota answer, I would say. That's not what you expect from a champion. Figure out another way. Like you said, post them up. Like, figure out other ways to do it. Don't just be like, he can't do it. Like put different lineup combination.
Not to be all, we're not here to chase wins, but right now, by a hair, Wiggins is averaging a career best true shooting percentage. I assume that's going to get better when he is flanked by more talent in the future. He's going to give you a big wing who can defend, who is very useful going forward. Whatever happens this season is whatever happens this season. I just don't think it matters that much in the grand scheme, is what I'm saying. It's not.
I'm just saying, if you can't do it, then don't just put him with Steph in the first units. That's all I'm saying.
You can ask him to do it, but he's miscast. And whatever option you have to do it is probably not going to be a good option just because of the roster.
So then we can't question the cast?
Oh, yeah, we can.
Say, hey, don't make him that guy. Like, that's what I'm saying. He's in the second unit because that's what they want him to do. So then either he does it and you figure out a way to make him do it, or you don't put him there.
Or you just say, you know what, they're going to put him out there. And
say that with Brad Wanamaker then. Say it with Draymond. Say it with everybody. Why not? hey, man, Brad Wanamaker is going to shoot 30% from the field.
Well, I think they're generally saying they don't know that they can never expect this out of Andrew Wiggins. They want it, but they're not going to expect it. They maybe expected it when they made a trade, who knows? But at this point, they're putting in the second. You know why they're putting him in the second unit? Because Oubre is good with Steph and Draymond. That's why they're putting him in the second unit.
And Wiggins isn't a bad component of a second unit.
It's just like he's not going to go get you buckets. But that's why they have Pascal initiating. That's why there's some more pressure on Wanamaker. Listen, if Wiggins was balling out, there wouldn't be as much pressure on Wanamaker, who can't make a shot, because somebody else would be initiating the offense a little bit more.
So if you're a Wanamaker, aren't you saying that? Like,
yeah, at some point. But you know what? That's how life is.
So I'm speaking up on behalf of Brad Wanamaker. Like,
you're speaking up on behalf of every Minnesota fan in the year 2017.
I like Wiggins. I think Wiggins is good. I actually think Wiggins is better than what I think y'all saying this too cavalierly. Wiggins can score. I don't know if he feels comfortable enough.
Are you Shaq on inside trying to... Try to fire him up to get him to live up to his potential through bullying?
I think some of this is on Steve Kerr. Got to run a different, like, got to set him up better. I think some of it is like, I think Wiggins.
Well, they're changing the lineup, score. It seems.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. I'm not talking crazy here. Like, they see it too. But I'm just saying this idea that, whatever, there's a whole huge component of the team that could just be, whatever. I don't care this season, next season, four. That's not how a championship operation works. They're not going to be a mediocre team with mindset because they're mediocre this year. You're building Wiseman. You're building these youngsters with a championship mentality. So you can't just be like, that guy just doesn't have to have it.
I disagree. We have so much evidence that Wiggins is not good when surrounded by guys who can't shoot or play make. We've seen it for years.
That's
in Minnesota.
My point is, then don't put him with them guys.
But we keep going in circles because there's no other. The point that we're making is, okay,
you're saying
do it.
It doesn't matter at all, right? Second unit, it doesn't matter. I'm saying don't put him there then.
Well, I'm then saying you're gonna put all the options are bad. Like, all the options are.
Yes, put Bazemore there. Why would you set Wiggins up to get killed doing something he can't do? Yes,
he's not getting
absolutely.
Killed. He's just like playing decent.
No,
defense
he's getting killed on the court. No, he's getting killed on the court. He's losing killed. In lineups. He's getting outplayed.
The point we're making is Wiggins can't do it, and whoever you're going to put in there probably can't do it, other than maybe G League superstar Jordan Poole, and entire thing. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's just what it is. There's no other option.
I fundamentally disagree with. There's no other option. That's number one. Number two, you're saying you can't keep him with the first unit, maximize the first unit.
They're doing that with Oubre.
And I'm saying, why not switch?
Because they tried that, and they've decided that Oubre.
They've never tried Wiggins the entire first quarter. They've never tried that. He's always been the second unit guy. Always.
No, no, no. Oubre.
They did try. They tried Oubre. They did try.
Yeah, they tried Oubre. That's what I'm saying. They haven't done that with Wiggins. This whole idea of whatever, it doesn't matter. I just don't think they operate like that or should operate like that. That's ridiculous. You put him in position to succeed. Period.
I want to end us on a prediction. In the next week or 2 weeks before our next podcast, Andrew Wiggins will have a nice stretch with the second unit where he scores that, let's say 6-8 points in a 2-minute stretch. And Marcus Thompson will go on Twitter and try to tell us how wrong we were, and he'll sound like a Minnesota.
Have I ever done that? No, that ain't how I roll, buddy.
No, and Marcus generally tells us on this podcast, in fairness to Marcus.
I'm just saying, and because he'll look like it, but he just won't consistently be it. That's just how I feel.
I think it's okay to understand what he is and what the capabilities are, and as long as he is helping the defense and he seems like somebody who is going to help you win games when you have more talent than what they have, then ultimately, combined with the Minnesota pick, that's a win.
You don't think his struggles on the second unit is impacting his minutes with the first unit? You think he's like switching it off and becoming a different person with the second unit, and you don't need that confidence and the swagger and the buckets on the first unit when Steph is in the game? Because if you watch that Laker game, he wasn't giving you buckets then either. His shot has been broken. And I'm saying, is maybe part of that because he's playing 6 minutes in the second unit. It's not like, hey, he could flip a switch and now.
He was doing that when he was shooting well. He was doing that when he was shooting well.
He was doing what?
I kind of think he was playing with the second unit and while he was shooting well, too.
You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, is what I'm saying. Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I kind of just think Andrew Wiggins is going to be Andrew Wiggins at all times. That's just how I feel.
Except on defense, apparently.
Well, he's going to be Andrew Wiggins.
Said he's a different player on defense than he was in Minnesota. So that part can change, but nothing else can possibly change about Andrew Wiggins. Except he'll be a great all-NBA defender. That'll be different, but the other part won't ever be different.
I don't think he's all-NBA defender. I think he's a solid.
I'm just saying, you know, people were talking about, he's playing great defense. Nobody said he would come and play great defense. On that thing, there's possibility for change. Anything else, there's no possibility. I got it.
He's a 33% three-point shooter who's relatively inefficient, is always going to score over 10 points, is never really going to score much over like 24 in a game. He's going to kind of sit in that. He's going to leave a lot to be desired because he gives you a few minute stretches where he might look like he could take over for a second unit. But the reality is, he's, what, 7-8 years into his career? It's just, he mostly is what he is.
This should just be a Timberwolves podcast right now. So this is the Timberwolves discussion.
Steph Curry on the court, Wiggins shoots 49% from the field. Steph Curry off the court, he shoots 41% from the field. Steph on the court, he shoots around 38% from three. Steph off the court, he shoots around 29% from three. I think this is the big thing. He's a complementary player. He's somebody who benefits from Steph creating open shots. He is not somebody who is going to create efficient open shots when Steph is not on the floor, regardless, I think, of mentality.
So let's play him 12 minutes a game without Steph. Got it.
So you're just saying to pull him from the second unit entirely? Like, that's not going to help the second unit.
I'm just saying, at no point does a championship team say, oh, well, this is just who he is. If he's not good at it and you don't think he's good at it, you change. Literally.
They don't have Bradley Beal to just say, you know what?
Okay.
You don't like Wiggins doing it here. Bradley Beal, you take part of the second unit.
Fine, then give up. What are we doing? Like, why are we playing?
Per 36 minutes, when Wiggins is with Curry, he's plus 1.1. Without Curry, he is minus 7.2. I mean, but you're going to get these results with any guy. It's really, we're talking about Steph without talking about Steph.
Clay's numbers were exactly the same. Like, they're very similar. And it just, if you're with that second unit, you're going to get hurt because that second unit gets pummeled sometimes. And, you know, I think they're just taking it. Like, you don't put Oubre in there because Oubre is better. It's better for them to have more minutes with Oubre with Draymond and Steph. So who do you take out of that, Draymond and Steph? You take Wiggins. Would he be better with Steph and Draymond? Yes. but you lose less in their minds if you put him on that second unit. It's debatable, and maybe it all
and
changed.
I'm debating yep. it is yeah, all I'm
yeah,
saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, we're not just saying, oh, whatever. Like, I'm debating it. I'm questioning it. Absolutely.
They're changing that second unit, but part of the reason they are changing that second unit is I believe they've come to the realization that Andrew Wiggins is not going to be the primary guy in that second unit. He could be part of it.
That's literally my point. That's all I'm saying.
He could still be in it. He could still be in the five-man combo.
I'm not saying he can't be. I'm saying if he's in the position, like, he has to produce. Otherwise, he doesn't be in the position. That's what I'm – period.
Interesting, like, finding here is that Kelly Oubre, his shooting does not seem to be impacted by Steph Curry, which – I think I had lost track of that, but Kelly Oubre with Steph on the court from the field, 43.8%. Steph off the court, 43%. Steph on the court, 28.5% from three. Steph off the court, 47.2% from three.
Put Oubre over to second unit.
What the hell?
Not the way he's thriving with Draymond and Steph right now. I don't
put Oubre on the second unit. Like,
what is that? What the hell is that from Kelly Oubre?
I mean, it's going to be his role next year anyway, right? If he stays with the team, like, is he going to be him and Clay in the second unit?
Record this, send it to Minnesota. The Timberwolves fans will love this debate.
It's, all right, we should wrap debate over the years.
All right, that's enough for today.
We're getting that cue. So, look, you see Brian. Our producer, Brian Smith, is like banging on the clock. We will holler at you in, what, a couple of weeks?
Yeah, skip the All-Star Week.
And we'll no back, All-Star back Week for Warriors Plus Minus. We'll be back when the team returns. We'll be right back.